Greetings, world, and welcome to Full Circle. Today, you're in for a treat because I'm speaking to my one and only good friend, partner, ex-colleague, business partner. Like, this man is just a million things to me, and I know he's a million things to the world too. His name is Happy Shingela. Many of you know him either from his work at APSA or my multi-choice super sport or Tiger Brands, if you're old enough and have had enough summers, or Unilever, or IBM. To me, our paths crossed in 97 when I joined what was Herd Boys at the time and have continued to just learn and grow and evolve with this man. Today, we're going to go everywhere. This journey is a journey about how he got started, why marketing even was a thing he explored. I mean, how does a guy from Dubai end up founding an ad agency? You know, at a time when South Africa was very black and white. Today we've got shades of gray, but back then it was very clear. So to have decided with four other black men to found an agency that would present consumers who are black in a dignified way was a very brave move. There was no funding, so they used their own money, you know, and develop a camaraderie and a community that invited so many of us into it. And I am a benefactor of the University of Herd Boys, or Abelusi, as we called it. So I know you're going to love this. So be sure to share it far and wide. Tell those who don't know about this history. And subscribe, because the conversations of this nature and more will continue with me over time. So let's get started. I was trying to plan in my head how to start my conversation with you, because we can go to a million places, right? Yeah. I can tell people that you're my brother from another mother. You are this amazing, smart, funny, English, very insistent on proper English speaker.
That's what Dimapa tells me.
Yeah, well, that's what everybody who came through Herd Boys, I mean, people who came through Herd Boys say two things. One, happy and English. Two, happy and dress code. Like, if your tie is too short, please go and change it. So for me, I'm just excited because you have become truly a guy I met who would have been my boss in 1997 to a human being who's just a special part of my life. You add your own color to the rainbow that makes this life of mine. But
oh, thank you.
For people who don't know you, how would you introduce Happy Shingela?
You know, there was a part of me that I used to explain. Mm. And then I decided not to explain it. Because I thought, well, if that's who I am, then why am I explaining myself?
Yes.
So people say to me, you know, when we look at you, you look like an unapproachable person. And then the very fact that they raise that, I guess assumes that they then find me approachable. So it seems there must be something in my demeanor when people get a first impression of me that tells people that this guy is like unapproachable. Yes, which is actually, when I was younger, I tried to explain it. Like, so when you explain it, you say to people, oh, me? No, come on, I'm approachable. I mean, you don't really say that, do you?
Yeah.
However, I love it because it becomes a defense mechanism. It protects me. It's a layer that protects me from potential abuse.
So it's a nuisance filter.
Yes, and I love that about me and my demeanor, because when in fact I guess you've broken through that barrier, then you find me approachable. That's good, as long as you know that there are limits, and define limits yourself. I didn't. So that is a that is a, that's I guess who I am. There's also another part. I mean, I don't suffer fools, but at the same time, I don't go out looking for war. So, you know, and I think it's that little teacher in me that wants to reach out to other people, which I guess I do in abundance, sometimes to my own detriment. And yeah, so I am that person, and you know, I've reached that age where one reflects and says, sure, what did I bring to this earth? And as I always say to people, when you're young, you must take advantage of your youth in order to be able to define what's going to happen to you. Because, you know, you've got to set, as we say, you've got to set goals and have certain thresholds. You know, you need to have a house at a certain age, a family at a certain age, and all those things, and self-fulfillment at a certain age. Because when you are old, you cannot have those things. You can't be setting objectives when you are old. You can redefine yourself. You know, you can take up studying, which is what Dr. Marutula did. But you cannot grow old and irrelevant, you know, which is I think that's what people do to themselves. You know, they say, I'm old now, and what to do? And you know, I tend to ask people, so you woke up today and you felt that you are old now, and you are now in the what to do kind of, I mean, are your limbs not functioning anymore? You know, is your brain stopped? And the guy next door has decided to blow his leaves from his garden, and I'm sure you can hear the sound.
He's adding
yeah,
to
so
whatever.
yeah, so that's really, I guess that's really who I am. I'm very comfortable in my own skin. I think, you know, I was brought to this world to fulfill certain roles, others more than other people, and if one were to reflect, would I choose different? Would I have been a different happy? Would I have chosen different? No, I think, you know, you take that which has been dished out to you, and you make the most of it, which hopefully I think I did a good job of.
But you're also your mother. Your mother.
I'm my mother's son. Oh yeah, definitely. That's what my sisters tell me. Yeah, may her soul, as they say, once again, rest in peace.
No, because I think, and you can actually remind me what you remember about our first meeting, because I've always been very clear about the role your mother plays in the choices you have made, but also in the outcomes of the choices you have made. There's a very specific part of your heart that wants to make sure she is proud of the person you have become. And that's what I mean, that you're your mother's son. Am I right, or am I reading this
Yeah.
wrong?
No. You're very, very correct. You know, whenever I think of my mother, and I remember doing an interview with Jenny Cruz Williams, and she said to me, if there was one wish that you had and you could fulfill today, what would that be? And I said, oh, how I wish I could build my mother a house. you know, which is something that could never fulfill because, you know, she was young. But it's the values those types of people instill in you that live with you for the rest of your life, and the struggles that they would have gone into to define what you become in life.
Mm.
And, you know, so when my mother passed away, I had the displeasure of having to go and collect her valuables at work. And, you know, they give you that envelope. My mom was a factory worker. They give you that envelope and you take it. And the interesting thing is I never opened it. I took the envelope and I think I was still in mourning, and I was filled with grief. I just wanted to leave that building, which ironically, by the way, happens to be the same building that APSA is built on, which means at some point I worked in the
you
same.
Worked,
the,
your mother worked.
My mom worked, which is quite quite interesting. But so one day, after I had taken over her bedroom, I needed to use the drawers. And in the drawers was this envelope. Would have been like a couple of years later. I had never opened it. And it had money inside, cash, which was, I guess, due to her, because she used to earn she used to be paid what was referred to as fortnightly.
Mm.
Yeah.
So and her fortnightly is every second week.
That's it, yeah. And my mom used to earn 258 rand every fortnight. And yet she managed to take me through university. And you know, when you're a kid and you ask for money from your mom and your mom says, I don't have money,
don't have.
Your immediate reaction is, how can you say you got no money when you work? Because, you know, as to children, work equals money and not how much money.
Yes.
And, you know, that broke me, obviously, when I saw that. And I mean, I still have that piece of paper today, which was in some kind of card. And inside there was also a clocking card, you know, factory worker's clock. But it was to teach me a lesson that, you know, there is that thing called how much is enough.
Mm.
And at the same time, there's this, I don't have enough, but I'm going to do enough for my kid to get to where he can get to. And, you know, I did the rest. I mean, I when I studied, I knew I needed to get a bursary. And to get a bursary means you've got to perform well.
Yeah.
And to perform well means you've got to work hard.
Yeah.
And to work hard means you've got to be disciplined. And to be disciplined means you've got to have objectives.
Yeah.
So I wanted to be, I was in there. And while my mom was still alive, my father had just passed away. And he mm-hmm. passed away when I was 19. And she was then left with me and three other kids. And I was at university. And I needed to finish there in order to go and help her raise her children. Little did I know that, you know, she would also pass away quite early. And then I ended up, one morning I woke up and I had four children. And, you know, and as they say, the rest is history. And I didn't like go, oh my goodness, what do I do now? Of course, I would have been shocked by the experience. I was only 28. But I then decided, okay, that's it. You're the dad. You're going to have to bring up your siblings, and you got to do what you have to do. I mean, you know, 28 is young. Bringing up three of your siblings is not easy.
In South Africa as well.
Yeah, I mean, in South Africa during apartheid, you know, it, and then as if that was not enough, and then you start a business in South Africa during apartheid, and you start an advertising agency. Are you mad?
But what had you smoked? I mean, what had you and those four guys smoked? Because you know, today, when you have conversations about transformation and BEE and people, I think people gloss over the complexity and the intensity of exclusion that was prevalent at the time that you guys founded Herd Boys. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think people rush to the sound bite, first black owned and black managed ad agency. You speak of it as though the environment was equitable, that everybody had a chance, that everybody had equal opportunity, that everybody came from privilege, you know? So please,
Look,
can you just do this thing justice by painting the picture of this is what it meant in 1992 to start an ad agency?
to start and I mean, we didn't know what we were doing because the first thing that we started doing for about a year when we had taken the decision to start an ad agency is we started trying to raise funds to start an ad agency. We needed money. We needed somebody to fund us. And we found this guy who was a person who finds money for people. And he looked for money, and everywhere we went, we were denied this funding. I guess primarily because we were black and we were male, probably going to steal the money. This is South Africa after all, and there was apartheid, so they just didn't trust us.
Yeah, and you didn't go to schools that people could refer to.
No, we didn't have the school. We went to school in the townships, and we went to rural universities, and not because we wanted to go to the rural universities. The law said we must go to
Yes.
rural universities. So yeah, no, we didn't have Big Brother somewhere who was going to look after us, or we didn't have old money to look after us. So everything was stacked against us. And we all came from Soweto. I mean, come on. But we didn't realize it then. But we were selling, because every time they asked us the question, yeah, but guys, what are you selling? And we used to say, we're selling ourselves, we're selling experience, we are these guys who know so much about advertising. And they said, no, we can't invest in you. And we were wrong. We didn't need money to start an ad agency. We needed ourselves to start an ad agency. And maybe we needed a client, which is why it did not come by accident that the first client we got was National Southern Breweries, run by black people. And the marketing director at Southern Breweries, National Southern Breweries, was a black man. And he took a punt on us, So we started an ad agency the way everybody starts an ad agency. We started an ad agency from the boot of our car using somebody else's resources while we were still employed by Ogilvy. So basically we used their resources, we used our brains, but we used their drawing paper and that kind of stuff, and some of their employees who would later come join us. That's how you start an ad agency, but it was difficult. You would know, but to go for 5 months without a salary, and back then I earned 12,000 rand a month, and 12,000 rand a month in 1991 was a lot of money.
You're rich, dude.
And I walked away. I walked away from that, and for 5 months now I do not have money. And I've got huge responsibilities. But the first thing I had done is when my mom passed away, I'd already bought myself. Now I was actually to my second house. And so I sold the house because I didn't want to have any debt and moved back home with my siblings. In any case, that was the thing to do. So I didn't have a bond. The only debt I had was was for my car. And you know, at 28, you do drive a BMW 3 Series. I don't know why. You shouldn't, but I drove one. And I put money to the bank, and the bank used to phone me every day. And I used to have this guy who insisted that I call him by his surname and refer to him as Mr. Nduli. Black guy, you know, like. But he told me, I asked him, why must I call you Mr. Nduli? And he said they were trained to not get familiar with the customers, especially the ones who don't pay their debt. You know, can't be friends with them. You need to repossess their car. So to go for 5 months without a salary is a very, very difficult thing. You know, I may have mentioned to you that whatever happens to me, there is one thing that I would really, really, really not like to see happen to me ever again. It's called poverty. It is very, very difficult to go home and you know that there are children at home that are sitting there hungry and you cannot feed them. I did everything in my power. You know, I used to try and augment my salary by writing articles for newspapers and doing all sorts of things, which I did to augment my income. I would go some days. I, you know, go visiting. I also had a bit of a good-looking face, so I could visit young ladies who could cook for me.
And they could feed you.
Yeah, so I went there under the pretext that I'd come to visit. When in fact I had come to be fed,
Be fair.
while my siblings were eating the puppet place that I had cobbled together somehow, thanks to my grandmother who moved in with us and came all the way from Limpopo and stayed with us in order to look after the kids. You know, that's what grandmothers do. So at least that gave me an opportunity to be able to work. And you know, you talk about the ad agency. We used to work 24 hours. You know, the deadlines were crazy. We were trying to impress, and the money
But
was
what
not
was
coming
the
in
plan,
as.
dude? What was the plan? Was the plan to start an agency that changes the world? The plan to start an agency to change the way people think of black people? Was it to start an agency because you wanted to be your own bosses and make money? Like what was the, you know, today people talk about purpose. So if you could retrofit it, what in you what would be what was the purpose of Herd Boys?
We believed we could start a business that would be successful because we, as they always say, they say in marketing, we saw that there was that gap in the market. That for sure, for sure, for sure, you could tell that what came to be known as the main market, thanks to us, was everybody in a meeting was talking about the black market, the black market. And you sit in rooms where people talk about insights, you know, that word insights. And you think, my goodness, if this industry is so lily white, then they don't know the insights. You cannot second guess black insights in the same way that I can't second guess white insights, you know. But they gave me a peek into their world.
Of course, of course.
Through apartheid, they gave me a peek into their world. And they avoided us and made sure that their children do not get a peek into our world. Right? So we had an advantage. We were speaking their language. We were writing ads in their language.
Our
We were
parents were
selling.
cleaning their homes.
Well, our parents were cleaning their homes and telling us their secrets.
Their secrets.
Yet, we lived the market. So when we said, no, it's not done like that, or when we said, yes, this is how it's going to be done, the likelihood was that we were right. And, you know, that wonderful man, Mike Friedman, when we sat and did a strategy session with him, And we had this bravado saying, no, we don't wanna be seen as a black agency. We wanna be seen as a black owned agency. Because you know, we straddle both worlds. He asked us the question, I understand what you are saying, but he said, aren't you playing an away game? Because he said, right now, there is nothing wrong with you being experts in that market. Everybody's trying to get into it.
Yeah.
Own it. Of course, you understand that we did not want to be painted with a brush that says we only understand one side of the market. So however, as a start, it wasn't going to hurt us.
Mm.
You know, if you, when I tell people that when we sold that business, who our clients were, I mean, people think you're going to say, Glenrick, Sunbeam Polish, yeah, Omo, Washington, no.
Kiwi.
No. We were SA Breweries. We were SAA. We were Rackets. We were
Eskom, MasterCard.
MasterCard, L'Oreal. You know, Coca-Cola, by the way, you know. And so, because we were able to do all of those great things, we were safe. And it, I think I may have mentioned to you that at the beginning, all we wanted was to get an opportunity to get into someone's boardroom. And that's all we needed. If you allowed us into your boardroom, because everyone was like, ah, there must be some black upstairs. When we walked into a boardroom, first we were properly dressed, proper. And so as a client, the likelihood is that you could also get taught how to dress.
Yeah.
you know, just an extra, we could, you know, show you. And as I say in my book, we didn't buy our meat where we bought our clothes.
Bought our clothes, yes. Different departments, different stores.
Make sure, as long as they sell meat there, we do not buy our clothes.
Yes. That's
so when we wanted meat, we went to the butcher.
Yes.
And when we wanted clothes, we went to a proper boutique. So the point was, we walked into a boardroom and we looked like business people. And we stood up, and when we presented like proper business people. And because they made us, because we're in business, you present in English. By the time we left, the client possibly would go to the office and open the dictionary and just check out one or two words that we may have said during the presentation. So we left them with no doubt for sure. No doubt for sure that these guys know what they're talking about. And we're not like some guys taking a chance. We knew the advertising game, and we knew it in and out. So we were not some Johnny come latelys. But it meant so much to us that we do succeed. So we didn't just start something because it was fashionable. It wasn't fashionable to start an ad agency or a business of that ilk.
Yes.
In 1991. But we were not going to, because everybody at that time, if you remember, was, what do you do? No, I have a placement agency. That's because people, that's when people were still referred to as personnel.
Yeah.
And people either had a research firm, or, oh no, I have a placement agency. That's really what we pushed into, and also an event management kind of reasons is that, those things had become what Black people were doing when they started, businesses, if they were not going to start a taxi business. So we came up with something that was totally different. And we did disrupt the market and disrupted big time, as you know. So, yeah, so the answer to your question is, it was difficult. You know, after 5 months with grown-up men who have families and kids and all those responsibilities, people break up and go for the easy option.
Yes.
The five of us stuck together, you know, and I mean, one of the stories we tell, and people find it incredulous, is that we would raise this money at the end of the month, let's say 15,000 rand,
yeah.
Five guys, you'd think three times five. No, we didn't do that. We would ask who has the biggest need right now. And, you know, some of the guys had bonds, and then we'd say, okay, you take 10 now, and then we take one each. And next month, it's not you got. Now, this time, it's my turn.
Yeah.
It was, okay, how could I? You know, and that built us. It built us because there was so much trust and understanding amongst ourselves that it will turn one day. And it turned one day, you know, as you know. And that trust was always there amongst ourselves. You know, you do know that you get closer to one of the, it's a natural thing. But what we never used to do is we never used to visit each other's homes that much, because I guess we knew we're not going to get much food in that. But if I go visit food, there's a likelihood I won't get food, rather visit other friends who are like-minded.
But you touch on two things, right? The things that I know for certain for me that were never negotiable. The one is a conversation around Black excellence, right? And the other is the caliber of human beings you choose to work with. So talk to me about that, because I mean, since your time, there have been so many Black startups. I haven't experienced, and I may be biased, but I haven't experienced a consistent hitting the mark on this thing called Black excellence, or a conversation around what is the caliber of partnership that allows for a startup to become a successful business. Like, how did you choose? Why? How do you think you guys got it right?
You know, the level of maturity with which we approached this thing surprised me. I mean, I was still very young, you know, and maybe on the quiet, I also knew that if this thing didn't work out, I was still flavor of the month in the corporate world, you know.
Okay.
But we were different people, as in our skills were different. We did not all of us know the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We needed each other for the business to succeed. And we also did not say, we are all equal partners, as in one of us, we can't have a boss. That was a very important thing, that one of us must be the boss. And in this case, it was Peter Wundlen. And this one will run this department, this one will run that department. And we also understood that we needed to pull for each other.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it was easy for us to attract good people because of who we are. I mean, we see through the BS very, very quickly, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we got rid of the BS very, very quickly, as you know. So, but the values aligned.
Okay.
The values aligned. None of us was a thief,
yes,
or had twisted morals or values, like, you know. So, you know, none of us would ever be called into some commission if ever there was a commission. We were just straight as far as that is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And if you tried it, we made you toe the line very quickly. I'm talking about clients who did try. You know? But we told you very quickly, we don't play that game. We are in the advertising game to make you look good, to make you sell more, and to make you famous. But not to do other things that you didn't tell us when you appointed us. And that was a very, very, very good thing that we picked each other without knowing that we shared the same values.
Awesome.
And this excellence was, we almost felt like we were being watched.
Mm-hmm.
Failure is not an option type of thing. People are watching.
Yes.
So, when we looked for the good people that we ultimately ended up with, we did make some bad kind of decisions, employing some people that, well, didn't last long because, you know, soon we found out.
Yes.
However, we ended up finding this excellence and being surrounded by this excellence, these young people working with us who just enjoyed themselves. And suddenly we had this big building in Sunning Hill. And one day I got asked by the Financial Mail, how many black people are there? How many white people are there? How many women are there? And I said, I actually don't know. But I think there's more women than there are men, which is good for the Christmas party.
Yes.
That was my answer. That was my stock answer. But at some point, we never knew whether we were 50-50 black or white, because it suddenly became a South African agency. You only cracked it there, though, if you knew what you were doing. You had to be good, understand that which... what our dream was, and minimum requirement was the excellence, and I guess we stuck with that, and the values. I mean, you will know some guy that came to work with us and he started making some claims for entertainment he would not have, and we would not have done or executed, let's call this entertainment executed, with clients, and then you come and make a claim. And I made sure that that person was out in a flash, because it starts with small things like that.
That's
and
true.
Then grows into other things. So yeah.
But I think the danger, though, is you are this, because, and I try and correct people oftentimes. I go, no, but Happy's the guy who, one of the people who started. I'm like, yes, yes, yes. And then he did a million other things, right? So the question is, if Matthew McConaughey is the Hollywood actor who goes, all right, all right, all right, and he's aware that whilst all right means that's how people know him in culture, it also can be the only thing they know about him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yes, Herd Boys is your all right, all right, all right. But that's not the only thing you have done with your life, because I know for a fact that the journey that may have started there and the values that came from there are the things that you took into all your other roles since Herd Boys, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the question I ask you then is, how do you then have the conversation about the rest of your professional portfolio life, right? Because then you go and you fix a red bank and you go and you tell people how to play sports on time on television. Like, because these are the things that you have done. And we don't have these conversations, which for me is a worry, because then it means the world only sees the rearview mirror, whereas this windshield was all these other magical things that came as a follow-up.
Yeah. Look, when I tell people that I used to sell margarine, and that was my first job at Unilever.
Yeah.
And being a salesman is probably the best way to learn marketing, because you get to see how people make decisions to purchase one brand as opposed to another. And, you know, through merchandising, you learn, you know, when I was a sales rep, often you get given a merchandiser who does merchandising for you at the Pick and Pay, at the OK Bazaars and the Cheppers. You must get there before you get there. But when he doesn't get there before you, for some reason, he's got a hangover, he didn't pitch, they would give you these boxes of margarine by the store manager.
Yes.
Because there's no margarine on the shelves. And you have to open the box, and they give you this gun that we used to put the price on the thing.
Yeah.
And you know, I was young, and you know, I worked not far from the university, so the young ladies were there. You know what I mean? And they would see me at the nightclub on the weekend, and then on Monday they see me packing margarine at a Checkers or a spa, and I guess they would look and say, "Is that what he does?" You know, and not know that, you know, I'm filling in for this merchandise, and that I really have a proper job. I drive a car, you know, that
type. And have a business card.
But you know, but packing those boxes and packing that margarine on the floor gives you access to the lady or the gentleman that's going to come and buy the margarine or buy the opposition's margarine, and you say, but why are you buying that one and not this one? And you get consumer insights. And if you really care, you walk around and ask them, why are they buying this toothpaste and not that toothpaste? And you begin to learn about consumer behavior. And so that's what selling did for me when I was at Unilever. And I've also worked with computers. You know, I worked for IBM, and when IBM was the number one computer company in the world, you know, I was in the communications department, which included marketing. But at the time, I was a writer. A lot of people don't know that I was trained as a writer. They think I just write they think I speak as I write, or I write as I speak. But at some point, I was actually trained as a writer, which is why I love writing even to this day.
Which is why you fix my punctuation.
I've fixed a lot of your punctuations, and I've also taught you that from 1 up to 9, you write in
the words,
as in the words from 10 onwards.
The figure.
You write the numbers. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, I've worked for Tiger Brands. So I've worked for these big companies, and I worked for Ogilvy. And at university, I was a motor mechanic fixing VWs, you know. that's what my father taught me. I don't know if I can fix cars today, because I think when you open the engine, you can't even see where the engine is. Today's cars, they're so covered. Yeah, and, you know, my marketing world is, people don't know that I was the marketing director at Vodacom.
There we go.
And yeah,
and you have to tell them, you know, the weekend.
The Yebogogo era.
Happy?
You pixelated there in here.
You have to tell the Vodacom campaign, the price sensitive one. What was it? The weekend every day. What was it? There's a campaign.
You're talking about the kind of packages that were there. Yes. There was a package called something every day, weekend every day.
Wow, yes, or something.
But it was during but I worked there when we were doing those campaigns for that ended with Yebo Gogo.
Yep. And that got me into trouble. Do you remember the Yebo Gogo? That got me into trouble because what do you mean you don't remember? You don't remember at my wedding when the priest says, "Do you, Sizakele, take this man to be your wedding husband?" I'm like, "Yebo Gogo."
No.
I can't record this. Your fault.
I know. And Yeah, so I think you're the best part of my working career, would you
Yeah.
believe? Of course, Head Boys is special because you know that was our own business, and I really enjoyed running it, and working with people like you guys. I think you know I just enjoyed being the boss in that environment. As in that successful environment at Head Boys, you know. But the best part of my working career was at the Red Band.
Okay.
First, I didn't want that job. I refused it and refused it and refused it until, you know, I took that job because I needed money, the sign-on fee in order for me to complete my house. So I was just going to be there for 2 years, and that was done.
Yes.
And almost 7 years later, I was still there.
Yes.
But it was the best part of my career because I worked with a big brand that was battling from a branding point of view in terms of, I guess, occupying its rightful position in the marketplace. And I would like to believe that together with my team, and I really believe that during that period, the period between 2008 and 2012, we probably had the best marketing team in the country. The people I worked with, they knew what they were doing. You know, that bank, during my spell there, we took it from number three to number one and stayed there for 6 years in a row. It was the coolest bank, the number one banking brand, and we were winning sponsorship awards. We were having fun. And it is the same bank that where I did the sponsorship for Bafana Bafana.
Yes.
And I mentioned this because 2010 happened in our country.
Yes.
And we were part of 2010 through Bafana Bafana. And boy, what an amazing, amazing marketing experience. Having to work with big brands, work with the world. And, you know, one of the things we wanted to do, and I certainly wanted to do this, was to make sure that the foreigners who came into our country thought we were the only, if not
Any
the
brand
biggest bank.
sponsor?
Yes. And so what we did, I mean, How Train was launched in 2010. We took all the train stations that How Train was on. We painted the airports red. So when they arrived, all they could see was Absa. And remember, we were Absa member of the Barclays Group.
Yes.
So if you're a foreigner, you see Absa and Barclays, where are you likely to go? You're likely to go to this big bank that I see everywhere. I jumped off the aeroplane and there was this red Absa bank member of the Barclays Group. I got into train and inside the train there was that at the state train station, it was just this bank. Wherever you went, we were there. And then when you saw the Bafana Bafana bus that carried the players, it has this bank's name. I promise you, it was one of the most amazing things I've ever been involved with. Painting South Africa red. And yet we were not the main sponsors. The other bank was the main sponsor, but I think you would find it, you would have found it very difficult in 2010 not to see us. The only way not to see Absa was for you to close your eyes. I promise you. And it came as no surprise there that we're number one banking brand. And then they asked children, which is the coolest bank in the country, and they said, it's us. Because we were behaving cool, you know. And look, I worked with a really, really a talented team of people, and we got the most out of them. And we gave the bank its rightful place in town. So yeah, and of course, you know, everybody wants a change. And when I got approached to go to SuperSport as the CEO, there's no way I was going to say no. No way. No way.
Why could you have not said no?
You know, I love sport, right? I really do love sport. Now, to be asked to go and be the CEO of the biggest purveyors of sport, in my view, in the world. I mean, I've traveled the world. I've turned on the television everywhere. I've not seen the amount of sport that you saw and you still see on SuperSport. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for me to go and run that company. And yeah, it's just, you know, I'm sure I would have been there still had I not, I don't know, man, had I not fallen sick. As you know, I had that unfortunate incident and it ended my working career, so to speak. That was the last time I actually went to work for somebody else.
now you're just a self boss now. So you're just bossing people around.
Bossing people and bossing myself around. I'm running. People don't know that I've done Comrades, you know.
But do you also lose toenails?
No, I don't.
So who loses toenails with those Comrades?
Because those people got the wrong genes, wrong parents, and that kind of stuff. No, I don't lose my toenails. I run. I still run. But you know, I ran Comrades for a reason. I always need to have something that makes me push myself.
That challenges you.
Yeah, and Comrades is not about the day you go out and run Comrades, because that's just one day. It is about the 6 months you put in to make sure that you take a proper body to that event.
But it takes us back to that discipline, right? Remember how you were laddering you're just not ready for the moment. You have to be in the state of mind that says, I will show up for that moment. So which actually is a nice way, I guess, to jump off. So when people ask me about full circle, for example, right? So there's the Zen full circle, which is it's like a brush stroke. The edges are never really closed, but it feels like this is a circle. And what full circle means for me is the ability to use everything I've learned and everything I've come to know to continue to connect and create with people I love and respect like you, like we're doing in this moment. What does coming full circle mean for you? Because you have had and will continue to have this deliciously complex, flavored, textured life, right? The places you've been, the people you've seen, the things you have done, the lives you have touched and changed. What does coming full circle mean for you? Jabs.
Well, I'm a student again, which is interesting.
Which is good.
Because while I'm still working, I've decided, how do we then redefine the next 20 years? And I decided, let's start by studying in order for us to define the next 20 years. So I know you want to give me another 2 years, but please can you give me an extra one? I just need another 3 years. And then I will complete my studies.
Okay.
And go into a totally, totally, totally different world, which is going to surprise everyone. What? Is that what do you mean? Because you know, people have sort of channeled, you know the phone call I get.
Yes.
Happy. Can you please help me? We have a marketing problem.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I think, why didn't you tell me that you've got a reputation management problem
or a business problem,
or
yeah.
have a business problem, because if you really check what I've done, you know, the likelihood is that I can solve your business problem,
yeah.
not just that one particular. Why don't you say I have a finance problem,
yeah.
kind of thing? Yeah. And so my full circle is my next, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
And it's called a total redefinition.
Awesome.
I don't think I'll ever get better at golf. I think this is it.
What's the best score in golf? Of course, you're speaking to somebody who doesn't recognize it as a sport. So,
no, maybe it's to play well all the time, and no golfer does. You're as good as your last game,
okay.
And the problem is when you've played well, like yesterday. If you played well the day before, you want to go play tomorrow because. Mm-hmm. I'm so good, and then you go tomorrow, and then it sort of brings you back to Mother Earth and says, "Oh no, this is golf. You're only as good as your last game." So my full circle is my next. When I've completed that, I will be fulfilled.
So let me tell you, the world will be waiting. But I will be keeping pace with you because I want to make sure that the stuff gets done. And before I let you go, this guy is
yeah.
a book that I'm going to get for you, because here is an example of a powerful rebrand. So if you remember Matthew McConaughey, he was the
yes.
rom-coms guy. Like, he's like, oh,
yeah.
how to lose a guy in 10 days, how to find a girlfriend who kisses
yeah.
you in the rain.
And yeah.
he does a 24-month walk away from Hollywood. He turns down every script that has to do with rom-com. He goes into the proverbial Hollywood desert where people forgot him because he wanted them to remember him for something new.
Yeah.
So when he
well,
came back in 2014 in the Dallas Buyers Club, he then goes on to win the Oscar. So I'm sharing this with you as encouragement to say, making yourself irrelevant in one field to generate irrelevance in another is a very powerful thing, and you'll get it done, because if there's somebody who will, it's you.
Well, this is what I was busy with before I got onto this call with you.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So I look forward to it. In a funny way, sort of way, thanks to COVID, I get to study more.
Yes.
And yeah, let's just wait for the clock. Let's not wind it. Let's just
yeah.
wait for it.
Yes.
I'm giving myself 3 years.
Okay.
I think that's reasonable.
That's all you're gonna get from me. Don't
yeah.
come asking for more. Like,
no,
you
no,
know,
no, no.
We have
no.
never happy in our life, in our working life together, ever gone back to a client to extend a deadline. You're
no.
not going to break that record now.
No, we don't extend deadlines.
No, we're not those
I'm
guys.
Working to that deadline. I have got children who know about it. So if I don't meet the deadline, how do I expect them to meet their deadlines?
Don't worry, the viewers of this show will also know about this deadline. So if there's a way to make yourself publicly accountable.
Well, I guess that's what we do, right? Is meet deadlines.
Yeah. So
that's not it.
Don't worry, you are not alone. We're right there with you. But this was so lovely. I could keep you here forever, but I know you've got to go back to section 2.2 of section 3 of section 99.
I was watching the television now, and I saw those people arguing about whether or not the prosecutor is a prosecutor. It's very interesting.
Wow.
It was that 17-year-old court case that still.
Here we are. Well, take care, my friend. It was lovely seeing you, and I'll catch you in the streets once we're vaccinated.
Thank you very much. Oh, I hope I'll get a vaccine one of these days.
Okay, please remember you have a sister.
Well, we have to end in the queue.
Okay, cheers.
Right, thank you. Ciao.
Cheers.
W.
This is Izangela Marutlile. You've been listening to Full Circle with me, Zal. You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And if you haven't yet, go to YouTube, Apple, Spotify, Google, or any platform of your choice to download this podcast, subscribe, and share with a friend or 10. Join me next time for another episode of Full Circle with Zal. Thank you for listening.